So we can start. Okay, maybe to warn you, the next one is not to make you feel guilty, because guilt is no point. I mean, guilt, if you want to ban something from your mind, ban guilt and shame. It's no point. It doesn't get us anywhere. You can feel regret about having done negative actions, or, you know, the wisdom to see the way I am and the way I see the world is creating suffering. So instead of feeling guilty when you see it, you should be happy, you know, and then starting from there. Because this whole thing on bodhicitta, it really shows us how selfish we are. So it's not, yeah, so just remember that. Guilt is no good. You become a horrible person. Because you deny yourself all happiness as a guilty person, and you can't bear when other people are happy around you, until you destroy their happiness as well. So we just sit quietly for a while. Make yourself comfortable. Sit with a straight back, full of self-confidence, and again, you know, I know that this is a lot, what you're getting, especially if you're here for the first time. It's okay. So instead of going, "Ah, this is so much," try to have the mind, "Wow, great, I'm getting so much," because usually we always want a lot. So there you go. And then whatever the mind is able to grasp and to understand, then you keep that. Whatever you think, "Oof, it's too high, I can't understand it," just leave it. You will have to listen to these things again and again and again and again. So give yourself the time to understand whatever seems understandable. It's okay. You're not perfect. You don't have to understand. I mean, I keep saying that. You seem not to hear it. Don't have to prove anything. You don't have to show off. You can just be one of many. You see, we all have this feeling of being special. That's our problem. And we forget that each of us, you know, is just a tiny, 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 tiny particle on this planet. So many beings. And I think I'm the most important. Well, how more confused can that be? That really helps us to open up when we think like this. The more important we think we are, the more problems we will have. And even if you think you are the worst of all, that also is not humility, that's also kind of pride, because there's always worse than you are. So just relax. If you want to experience the nature of your mind, you can only do that in a relaxed state. And very often thoughts about emptiness can make you relax, that this is just like a dream. It continues, different experiences, nothing is fixed, everything changes. And just relax. You're not special, you're just one of many. And that's okay like this. So in the previous meditation, what we did was this method of 6 points and or 6 causes and 1 effect, which comes from Asanga. And now we're looking at Shantideva's method, which if you have the Bodhicaryavatara, it's the 8th chapter on meditation, exchanging ourselves for others. And there again we go in steps. And the first step would be that to first see how we create differences in people that again from their own side is not there. Like we dislike some, we like others. And most of the people on these planets we're totally indifferent to, we don't care. They're just lumps of flesh, kind of, sometimes sitting or walking beside us. We don't perceive them as human beings. So we create these 3 categories of friend, somebody I like, somebody that is good to me, somebody I feel comfortable with, somebody I can trust. And if we're honest, somebody who behaves the way I want that person to behave. Then the other category is antagonist, somebody who does not behave the way I want them to behave, somebody who's not good to me, somebody who harms me, somebody who doesn't see my interests and does not want to fulfill them. So we see them as enemy or as antagonist. People who dislike me also go in that category. And then there's the strangers. And we have a tendency to draw like big black lines around these 3 categories and don't see how these categories again are only created by my mind. It has not much to do with this other person. And we exaggerate the good sides of the friend. We don't want to see the good sides of the antagonist. And we're totally uninterested in either good or negative sides of the stranger. So that creates attachment, anger, aversion, and indifference. And the attachment trusts too much, or let's say the attachment has a lot of expectation, the aversion doesn't trust at all, and indifference is just simply not interested. So what we're trying to do here is just to see how we project, again, inherent real existence, not onto them as people, they're all humans, but of good, bad, not interesting. So think of 3 people like this. Somebody that you like very much, a good friend, not somebody from your family. And then just look at your mind. You're happy, relaxed. Person calls, there's no problem taking that phone, answering. You want the person to be happy. If they're happy, you're also happy. If somebody harms them, they become your enemies as well. If somebody is their friend and they don't make them happier than you, then you're happy. If they make them happier than you, then you get jealous. And you try to find fault in that competition. In that person that is competing with you for the affection of that friend. And you definitely have a feeling that this person is an inherently really good person. Try to find that feeling. That's the most important one. That's the most mistaken one. This is a really solidly, inherently good person. Okay, then you take an antagonist. Somebody you dislike, somebody who is not good to you, somebody that you don't trust because they've harmed you. Actually, best would be if you can take a friend, somebody that at first you were friends, then something happened and now you feel aversion towards that person. Because then we can see the mistake that we made or that we're making. Check your feelings towards the person when you think about this person. Don't run away from them. I know they're not pleasant, but look at them and listen to what they say. This is an inherently really bad person. Might not be as strong as that, but the feeling is definitely I don't want to have contact with him or her. Just look, just check. No need to manipulate. So if it's somebody that before you liked and then something happens, how can that be? Still the same person. Can you see that these people can jump from one category to the other? It just depends on what they do to me, or the people that I identify with, or the people that I like, and I think they are the good ones. Has nothing to do with the person. Because that person still has friends, so he or she cannot be that horrible. And your friend, I am sure there are some people who dislike that person, so she or he cannot be that good as you see them. And then we take a stranger. Maybe somebody that you know the face, but you are absolutely not interested in that person, the lady in the supermarket who's doing the checkout, who's taking your money. Or somebody who sits next to you on the train or on the bus and you absolutely don't notice, you don't even remember their face. What happens when our mind now? It's a peaceful mind. There's no attachment, there's no aversion, but that's not the kind of peace we want. Because this person to us looks totally not interesting. Really not interesting. And we forget that the friend, the antagonist, at one point we might have met them who knows how many times in the street, on the bus, on the train, and they evoked exactly the same feeling of disinterest. And then because of meeting them on a closer level, maybe we were open, they became either friends or antagonists. Each of them at one point has been a total stranger. So there's no black line around that stranger either. So try to put all three people in the space in front of you. And be aware that we see three different people. We don't see the human behind it. We see a good person, we see a bad person, and we see an uninteresting person. And we don't see that it's our mind who is adding these attributes to these human beings. But it doesn't look like this. It looks as if the goodness, the badness, and the uninterestedness is coming from their side. We see a person that is worthwhile spending time with. We see a person that we would suffer if we would be with them in the same room for just two nights during a course. And we see another person that is not worth our attention. Okay, maybe now to make this more clear, you change the whole thing around. You think of a person who really likes you, another person who dislikes you, and somebody who is not interested in you. Somebody you know, but they're not interested in you. And you feel like being one person with positive and negative sides. But do you think that these three people see one person? The one that likes you sees a good person. The one that dislikes you sees a bad person. The one that is not interested sees a boring person. They see three different people, but you're only one. So which one are you? Can you see that from your side nothing is coming, but that these attributes are being given to their minds upon the basis of your body and mind? I'm not saying that there is people who do negative, there's no people who do harmful actions. I'm not saying that. Also not saying that there's people who are helpful. What I'm saying is that our mind exaggerates and then makes these three categories and makes them permanent. And then we get hurt when the friend is not doing what I want him or her to do. We can't accept the help of the antagonist because we decided that it's a bad person, not trustworthy. And we're not even looking for the good sides of the stranger. These attributes, good, bad, boring, are exaggerated, projected by your own mind. This is why there's three different people in space in front of you. So by practicing equanimity, we try to find things that we have in common and that are based on facts, and not based on an exaggerated mind, which has attachment, aversion, or indifference. So the fact is that we all want lasting happiness. It's a fact. What happens if you look at your antagonist and you think, he just wants to be happy, just like me and just like my friend. May he be happy. Does that person still look as so horrible? Then the other fact is they want lasting happiness, but none of them has it, just like me. Another fact, they don't want to suffer, but they do, just like me. Another fact is that we all have the potential to be calm, peaceful, kind, loving, and wise. But I don't give a chance to my antagonist to show these sides or this potential. And I'm definitely not going to put any effort into bringing them up because I don't want to see them. If you're looking at the person through the eyes of anger and you see good qualities, you get jealous instead of being happy. So this is what we do when we start to create equanimity. We see that, yes, of course, in this life, the antagonist, he was not very kind to me. But maybe he will be in the future. Or he was kind to me in the past. We can see that this changes constantly. If a friend that you've trusted very much hurts you, by putting them into the category of antagonist, you close the door for this beautiful friendship to continue once the negative karma of fighting with each other has exhausted. And that's a shame. So all we need to see is our exaggeration of good, bad, boring. All we need to do is actively look for sameness. Wanting to be happy, not wanting to suffer. Not wanting to be harmed, but wanting to be helped. We're all the same. So then the next point is we start to see the disadvantage of cherishing self, like I'm the center of the universe. So again, fish it out. That feeling, I am special. We all have it. What does come with it? The fear of not being recognized as special. The fear of being neglected, left behind, not being noticed. How does that feel? Whenever the self-cherishing is up and operating, there's always feel of lack. I don't get what I need, whatever it is. Takes up all the space. My specialness is not being noticed. And it's this seemingly self-existent I that is not you, it's just a mistaken thought. You do exist, but not as this I that tells us a lot of lies. This I seems to be existing apart from the body and the mind as a third entity. So we think, oof, I only have to make the body happy, I only have to make the mind happy, and then I will be happy. I don't need to change. But whatever affects the body and the mind affects the I. Because there is not one single I. The mind is happy, the I becomes happy. The mind is unhappy, the I is unhappy. So again, maybe to make it more clear, it's easier to look at somebody else who is just full of themselves, you know, always the first one, always kind of pushing to get what they want, never considered about others. And not seeing it, that goes with it. Not noticing it, because why? Because I am so special. You know this Magili feeling or whatever it's called. How does it feel? Look at it, look at somebody else. Do you think these people are happy even though they get every time what they want? Do you see how difficult they make it for us that we respect them and love them because they're so pushy? And we all think that we're not like this, just like them. They don't see it. So we're following here a thought that is mistaken. There is no separate, inherently autonomous I or me. There's a merely labeled I, so you do exist, but not the way that you perceive yourself as, like instinctively. Whenever people fight, it's because of self-cherishing. Each one is right, the other one is wrong. Because self-cherishing cannot see the side of the other, only sees its own side. That can be between friends, in families, neighborhoods, and whole countries. Whenever we follow the self-cherishing, we forget about the happiness of the other person. And whatever moment of unhappiness we have now comes through actions when we followed our self-cherishing. Our self-cherishing is always blaming others. I'm not happy because they don't do what I want them to do. Self-cherishing never says, "Oof, I'm not happy because I don't know how to laugh properly. I'm not happy because I'm confused about reality." Never says anything wise like this. It's always because I lack outside things, respect, appreciation, and so on. The self-cherishing looks down at those that are lower than you, have less qualities, competes with those that have the same qualities and is jealous and envious of those that have more qualities. In all three cases, it's not a relaxed mind. Whenever there's a problem, self-cherishing lies at the root. And mind training, generating bodhicitta, that's the cure for it. That is the one that will diminish it and finally make it disappear. So we can end the meditation by thinking about ourselves, because not being self-cherishing doesn't mean that you neglect yourself. So you generate the thought for yourself, this combination of body and mind. May I be well, happy, and peaceful. May I be well, happy, and peaceful. And you relax into that. I am a good person. but whenever the self-cherishing is there, I'm not aware of it, because it covers that basic goodness and takes away all the space that my mind would have by nature. But I am a good person. May I be well, happy, and peaceful. And I can be well, happy, and peaceful right now. Why? Because right now I have everything I need. And I'm talking about this very moment. This very moment, everybody has exactly what he or she needs. May I be well, happy, and peaceful. So if you think you suffer from too much self-cherishing, not that of the others, your own self-cherishing, because we're not dealing with the self-cherishing of others, this is what we blame, yeah? They're so self-cherishing, this is why I suffer, because it hits your own self-cherishing. Then the next meditation in the afternoon, that was really taking care of it in a very nice way, is by thinking about the kindness of others. Then it really, it diminishes. And then we start to see how comfortable it is when it's not there. So we have slight change of program. So you have lunch now, like 12 o'clock. It's a 1:45. Then at 1 o'clock, is here, yes, is the manager talk. Even you've done 700 courses, please come. They might say something new, who knows, you know. Just come as a member of the group, please. Then there's Dana, which is done in the Moadon. Then at 2:30, we do the meditation on kindness of others. I'll keep it kind of short. And then at 2:30 to 3, and then 3:30 to 4 is meditation on destroying the self. Tonleng, it's like, you know, this visualization that we visualize that it actually explodes, like Hutzli Wutzli, or what was his name? Yeah, okay. Like the Hutzli Wutzli, and then we are free of this stupid Hutzli Wutzli who, it always says that I'm good for you, look, I look after you, but it's always there when we don't need it. It takes up all the space and makes us say and do all these stupid things that are not true. It's the Hutzli Wutzli who says in the morning, oh, just 5 more minutes, you know, I haven't really slept well. And as if these 5 minutes are going to make a difference. You slept 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, I don't know, and then you think, that thing says, oh, just 5 more minutes. And then, oh, sure enough, out of the 5 more minutes, it's 7 minutes or 10 minutes, then you're late, then you're stressed, and then you have to run and all this, you know. Wisdom would say, come on, 5 minutes don't make a difference, get up, Yeah, that's what wisdom would say. But the other one is everything, you know, this self-judging, it keeps us back from everything that would be worthwhile. He's so afraid. Oh, be careful, this is too much. I remember we did Course of Thinking in Bar on the 8 verses. And it's true, the 8 verses are kind of for advanced people. It's pretty heavy stuff. And so we had put, like, only for advanced people. People came, I've never seen them. I didn't know who these people were. But they thought of themselves as really advanced. And when we did this Tong Leng, you know, that kind of destroying it, they were protecting themselves. They were giving themselves Reiki or I don't know what. So I saw them all sitting there kind of going. So I thought, like, what are they doing? It's like, you know, it's good to be kind to yourself. That's true, but don't overdo it. You're not special and you're not the center of the universe. And the more we recognize that, the less needy we become. And the more joy we have in reaching out to others, okay? And then again, be kind to yourself. We did the meditation on equanimity, so don't start with the most difficult person that you find it difficult to be kind to. Leave them alone for the beginning, you know? Because you will crash. You will not be able to dissolve the stings in your heart against that person. So first train with people that you like, you know? And also when people dislike you, do them a favor and keep away from them. Then they will relax. Nobody likes to be ignored, you know. This is what happened to me at one point. I felt that somebody really disliked me. So I thought, well, you know, you're not the only one on this planet. So I just kept away from her as much as possible. And very quickly it changed. Because I think she could feel that I was doing because of her. Because I could feel how I made her upset and tense. And she was, you know, she brought out her horrible side. See, somebody always needs a target. And poor thing, really, because, you know, I happened to be the target from time to time. So then I just kept away from her, out of consideration for her. Because, as I said, when we have aversion for somebody, we don't want to see their positive side. And maybe you noticed this already. There's some people in this world, whatever you do is wrong. Yeah. You try to be kind is wrong. Like she was in the centrals and she was SBC. So when I wanted to help her preparing for the pujas, because she's totally overworked also, I could see it came out of being tired and stressed. So I wanted to help. I was interfering and a control freak and I don't know. So I thought, okay, not helping. Then she was also complaining because I was never there to help. And just, you know, whatever you do, you can't win. When you feel it's like this, do yourself and others a favor and keep away from them. Of course, if you have to have contact, that's a different thing because you are working with them. But if you're working with them, don't criticize them. Don't tell them that you know everything better and whatever. And if you need to criticize them because you're the superior, superior? Huh? Like you have to guide them or whatever. Be as kind as possible, you know, and don't go like, again you did something. Because for you it's pleasant to tell them their mistake. So try to send somebody else, maybe, that can tell them that they made a mistake. Try to be skillful with these things. Don't just think about yourself. You see, the thing is, if you are the victim of somebody who kind of dislikes you, you're in a much better place because you can get out of their way. But we don't feel like this. We're the victim. She doesn't like me. Oh, this is horrible. I mean, who the heck you think you are that everybody should like you? You know? And you have to, you can move away. Whereas if you're the one who has dislike, and if you are somebody who has dislike, stay with that ugly mind and see how you have no choice and you cannot get rid of it. And then you start to understand how the other person feels, you know? I much rather be the victim of a great of kind of aversion than having aversion. Because then I have a choice, easy. I can just not have contact with the person and that's it. Whereas if I have the aversion, I see how I hurt the person, it makes me feel bad, and the closer the person is, the worse I feel. You see, this is all psychological. Do you speak like this sometimes in psychology? Yeah. It's all psychological games that we're playing. So do the other person a favor and just keep away from them. Yeah. And then maybe something dissolves. Of course, if the person is a spiritual practitioner, they will work at it. Like this one, I won't tell you who it is, you probably don't know her anyway. We're very good friends, again, you know. This is why, because then these people can't hurt you, you know. If you see that they have no choice, they can only hurt us because we think they have a choice, they do it on purpose. They're not doing it on purpose. We bring something up in them that is making them upset and uncomfortable. So, but if you feel hurt and then you get angry and then you know, very often then we even show in front of them how much they hurt us. Do you think that makes them feel better? Do you think that will change their behavior towards you? Do you think they will be grateful to you that you've shown them how bad they are? Probably not. Again, if you change the whole thing around, and you see how it is with us, you know. I know I've hurt somebody. That person is depressed and is sad. And blah, blah. How does it make you feel when you know that you are the one who has hurt the person? Does it make you feel more open and more relaxed? Or you never hurt anybody? Oh, you're the goodies. I see. So, oh, then we don't need to talk about this. Then that's fine. Then actually, if you never hurt anybody, you're in a bad position to understand aggressive people, if you have no aggression. So this is why it's good to have aggression when you start to study it in yourself, because then you know how the other person feels. If you're always peaceful. But you see, if you think you're always peaceful, aggression should not hurt or harm you. If you think you are as forgiving and peaceful as you are, you should never feel hurt. You become unhurtable. But if you feel hurt, if somebody aggresses you and you don't aggress back, then it is because you have suppressed aggression. And you just don't dare to live it out. So then you have to work with this. Okay, because that's also not the good thing, because then it starts to manifest in all kinds of ways. You can get sick, you can get, you know, aggressive towards weaker people that you think, well, you know, I'm their mother or I'm their child or I'm whatever, so therefore they have to love me anyway. So then I had a friend of mine, she said, it's amazing, I have so much aggression towards my family members. And she was working with handicapped people, severely handicapped people, and she said, I have so much patience with them and so much love for them. What can I do that I can, you know, I can get rid of that aggression towards my family? I said, yeah, because you think you own your family, they're my family, like subconsciously, not here, so therefore I can do whatever I want. Yeah. Difficult matters, but thinking about the kindness of others can make the self-cherishing go away. And, okay, again, when it comes to this emptiness part, you do exist, okay, as a combination of body and mind who's changing moment by moment by moment by moment. On top of that, we put a conventional I or me. The me who now feels, okay, hunger, I need to go there. Then the superimposed I, ooh, the food is really terrible. That's a superimposed I. The wise I, the conventional I would say, okay, there's nothing else, I settle for that. And then, you know, I have the choice between nothing or that. And then you feel more open and whatever is there is good enough. You know, this feeling of, I have what I need right now, you know, maybe tomorrow not, but right now you have what you need. It's like, it gives so much space. So much space. But no, we're constantly in the future, worrying about future, and then forget, can die in the meantime. If you die, you don't have to pay your bills anymore. It's fine, you know. But don't die. If you die with that reason, somebody else will come and collect them in your next life. A thief. Whenever you have a thief stealing your things, you can say, somebody is collecting the debts of my past life. It's not me who said that, it's Garchen Rinpoche. I found out exactly. It's exactly that. There's bills who are still open from my past lives. Now, they're paid. Yeah. It's a good way to think like that, isn't it? Because if you can't get the money back, why get upset? You know? Why? You can be happy. Oof. Bill paid.
Somebody got into my house in the Blue District and stole stuff.
Uh-huh.
I don't know exactly what, probably some golden rings or...
Can you speak a little bit louder?
There was a thief in my house.
Yeah.
In Blue District, I got a message.
Okay.
Gold rings and stuff like that.
Great. So you don't have to worry about them anymore. They're gone, you know. You don't have to protect them anymore. You can be really miserable because the rings are not there anymore. They don't seem to be... Why did you have them? I mean...
It was my mother, so... yeah. It had,
sentimental value. Yeah. But the sentimental value, where is it, you know? Is it in the ring or is it in the mind? Where did you keep them? Okay, so it was in your bedroom. Obviously, you didn't wear it.
No.
So then you think, wow, my mom will be really honored if somebody is so happy about this ring and I was wearing it. This would be a way of thinking about this, so that you suffer less. Because, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't try to find the thief. And it doesn't mean you shouldn't lock your house. Because the thief is not creating positive karma. Somebody else will come and collect the bill in another life. You know, maybe in this life already, maybe they find him, then he has to go to prison or something like that. Then you can, you know, like you try to find ways to think, you know, they were just lying in the drawer. Okay, so the sentimental value probably is not that big because I didn't even wear them. How many times did you open the drawer and look at them?
No, I used to wear them, I just didn't take them to the
room. Okay. Oh, okay. So that doesn't work. So you need to find something. So you need to find something else that works, you know. Especially that thing, you know. Oh, somebody else will really be happy and enjoy wearing them. Or maybe somebody who's really poor can sell them, and then they can buy food or medicine or whatever. That helps the most when we think like this. Somebody who is, this is what I thought also when somebody stole a lot of money from me. Now I don't have to think these things anymore. Now it's just, I have paid my debts. There was still some bills open. That's enough for me to be totally calm about this. But sometime, I was not a Buddhist yet, I think. I was traveling in Taiwan and I was going to the South Pacific, so I had a lot of cash on me, like $5,000-$7,000, I can't remember, because there was no cash machines there and hardly any banks on these islands. And somebody in Taiwan, I was there, broke into my hotel room and stole it. And so I was thinking spontaneously, oh, maybe it's somebody who needs, his mother needs an operation, now she can have the operation, you know. And for me it was then the question, do I go back to Switzerland? And I thought, no, why? I mean, I can go to Taipei, I go to the bank, some of it were traveler checks. I can get them back, and there's the cash, well, it's gone, but I still have money. I still had a lot of money, you know. Like, if somebody is really depending on this, then that's difficult. It's difficult to work with, like, you have to go hungry because of that. But if you don't have to go hungry because of that, it's like, at the time of death, we have to leave it behind anyway, so, you know. And then if you maybe think, oh, I wanted to give it to my kids and all this, it's like, give them love, that's much better than the rings of your mom. And dedicate, you know, like, if it makes the person happy that stole these things, may it be of benefit to my, is your mom is, that's died, that's his, or? Oh, she's still alive, okay. So then, but in case she would have died, you would dedicate it, you would dedicate it to her happiness, that she, by indirectly, she made you happy by giving you these rings. Now somebody else is happy by giving. So she made two people already happy by her rings. So even if she's still alive, you can dedicate to her. You can explain to this, Mom, look, he made me, well, she is very upset, made me very happy that I had these rings for a while. Somebody else now is happy. So you made two people happy. Fantastic. Don't know if she's open enough to see it. Sometimes we have to be a bit careful with our Buddhist ways of looking at things, because people think we're gaga or something. But the thing is, one try, because you can look at it from many different angles. So what we try to find, an angle where we don't suffer, because if they're gone, they're gone.
I'm not upset about it. I'm just really relieved that I wasn't at home, because I think if I would be at home, well, at home, I would be really scared. So
you will be scared.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was happy.
That's true. That's true. It's very invasive when somebody, because I was also in one of these islands in South Pacific. I wake up in the middle of the night and there's somebody going through my things. And, you know, it wasn't like in Samoa where I was living with the people. I was alone in the house. I was scared to death after it. I went up to the attic and pulled the ladder up. It's like, then I told the landlady next day and then she said, okay, I'll come sleep with you. Yeah, it's really scary. It's very, very invasive, kind of, when somebody comes into your house that, yeah. So you have to work with that feeling of, good thing I wasn't home, for example, otherwise something big might have happened. And yeah. And then you can meditate on emptiness. Who is scared? What is scared? I. But what is I? You know, like this. You can use it. Okay? There's many, many methods you can do how to deal with different situations. But yeah, I understand that you will be scared, because I know from my own experience. It comes, and there's nothing you can do against it. So don't run away from the fear. Be with it. Be aware of it when it comes. Hold it. Say, oh, hello, fear. Here you are again. And then try to see its nature as also being impermanent and having causes, you know. Like the possibility of somebody breaking in was there before somebody broke in. So why now am I so scared? Or invite somebody to come live with you. Do you have somebody who lives with you?
My kids.
Huh?
My kids.
Yeah, so... Okay. Anybody strong and handsome would like to go and live with her? Not to marry. I'm not supposed to be a matchmaker. It's one of my vows, just to protect her. A dog, maybe a dog. Cats, yeah, they don't bark usually. When, you know, a big dog that makes whoa, whoa, whoa. That's, but yeah, it's difficult. It's really difficult. Okay, so we offer the food, then we go eat it. I contemplate how much positive potential I've accumulated in order to receive this food given by others. I contemplate my practice, constantly trying to improve it. I contemplate my mind, cautiously guarding it from wrongdoing, greed, and other defilements. I contemplate this food, treating it as medicine to nourish my body. I contemplate the aim of Buddhahood, accepting and consuming this food in order to accomplish it. Imagine the food as a blissful nectar inside a vast jeweled vessel. Recite Om Ahum to first turn it into emptiness, because it just appears as solid food. When we visualize, then we understand kind of that it's just visualized, it's just an illusion, but still it has the function to make me hungry. When I visualize all this beautiful food, or when you visualize a lemon, yeah, the power of that, how it makes you have saliva in the mouth. So you see, it appears as ordinary food, is not, then we turn it into emptiness, and it appears again as nectar. Om Aum, Om Aum, Om Aum, to the precious Buddha, the peerless guide, to the precious Dharma, the peerless refuge, to the precious Sangha, the peerless liberators, to the three jewels, we make this offering. This food, which has 100 flavors, which is mouth-watering and well-made, we offer with faith to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. May all beings enjoy the food of concentration. We see this food as medicine. We eat it without attachment or aversion, not to increase arrogance, strength, or good looks, only to sustain the body. And we think by offering this food to all the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, may it create the causes so that nobody has to create negativity anymore to procure themselves for food. Like nobody has to steal, nobody has to kill, and above all, that nobody has to suffer because of our food. May that, by offering this food, may that create that cause. And also may the food that we are eating, may we see it, may we have the wisdom to see it for what it is. It's medicine. Like I just read something, is medicine is not health care. Medicine is, like what we call medicine, is sick care. What is health care is food, because that keeps you healthy. Medicine is for when you're sick. So the sickness of hunger can be relieved through the medicine of food. May we be able to see the food as nourishment, not as a source of pleasure, and finding happiness and pleasure in much, much, much better and deeper sources like love, compassion, and wisdom. May this food not create allergies nor addictions. So enjoy your food. I think they can break the silence now. Yeah. Anyway, most of it is broken anyway. So then at least you don't have to feel bad about this. And then you please come back at 1 o'clock. So then also I know that, you know, there's this urge wanting to go home because of traffic jam. The later you go, the less traffic jam you have. Like 9 o'clock leaving here, you can almost get into Tel Aviv without any problems. Especially if you stop on the way for coffee, then it's like, you know. So if you want to stay until then, please do. Because between 3, 4, 5, I think it's the worst. Because everybody has this thought that they want to escape the traffic jam. So then everybody goes early. And you have ways. So listen to your ways. And then if you're really stuck, look around and think, I'm not the only one. Let me practice some awareness meditation. Do breathing meditation. Perfect opportunity. And this, just this thought. Because you think you're the only one who wants to get home as quickly as possible. Everybody has this thought. And just to unite with all these minds, you know, think, I'm not the only one. Everybody is stuck. That releases the suffering of being stuck in traffic jam. Bon appétit.